been a pleasure, everyone. Thank you for letting us.
Hello, my name is Ginger Feldman from High and Mighty Therapeutic Riding and Driving Center, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Vital Weekly
is the experimental new music show from the folks formerly behind Stan Outlaat, an independent record label located in Amsterdam with a separate store in Berlin. Tune in Vital Weekly at 1 a.m. Wednesday after Battlefield Earth.
Vital Weekly. Desmarchand, a proud supporter of WGXE, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers, Desmarchand.com, DEMARCHIN.com, on Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
All Together Now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia counties, is looking for contributors. Are you a retired weather expert? Have you always wanted to cover high school sports? Do you attend your own town meetings regularly and possess a cell phone? Then you could be a contributor to All Together Now. Send your
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXE in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather.
So what's
going to
happen? I know why everyone's here, but we do have some agenda items to go through before we get to public comment. His report on shared services. Chief, want to start us off?
Okay, I think
this is the Hudson Common Council Police meeting.
Okay, so
live from Hudson City Hall.
We budgeted for comprehensive policy rewrite for HPD, which we've talked about before in committee. It's about updating our policies and our policy manual, keeping with changes of the law. So we've contracted with a law firm and just started the process. It's going to be about an 18-month process of going through our antiquated, some modern, to consolidate our policies and bring them up to date. It's going to be a report as we go through the project. We're going slowly through each one. And it's all done on a very good modern police manual.
start to finish has to be 18 months. It has to be 18 months. Maybe sooner, but. Yeah, there's a program that goes with it that allows the officers to access their policy from their cell phone. So if they're at a scene and not quite sure of the procedure or method, they can get on and readily get in what they're supposed to do. There's also a training module, so when our officers log on at the beginning of a shift, if there's a change in law, a change in policy, they'll automatically be tested on it. Their testing will go into a training folder file for each officer. It's definitely a more modern way of keeping up to date with the law.
Okay. Body cameras update.
Okay, two police committees ago, we submitted the bids. I'm just wondering if you guys had anything to report on your progress with that.
No, we're supposed to meet.
Has anyone seen the bids?
Yeah.
So I'm open to meet with whomever you decide to go through them.
Yeah. You're on the finance committee.
Okay. Yeah. Is it going to be on the finance end?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll send you the. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been working on the grant. We're still working on the $10,000 federal grant, which is a arduous process. We have another $10,000 from Hudson River Bank and Trust Company. So it's $20,000 towards the project. And I think the bids we got are in the neighborhood of a 3 or 5 year plan at around $70,000.
Deal with, and I thought a visual display of
the weaponry that's out there. Might drive home the fact that when we do a deployment, this is what the potential is on the other end of the other side of the door. And I don't think, I've heard a couple comments last week that they didn't think that it was effective or that we didn't really seize anything. This is what your 26-man department is dealing with in a 2.2 square mile area. Every one of those boxes represents some kind of long weapon. Every one of the small boxes represents a pistol of some sort. None of them are registered. So the point being is when we do deploy, and I've been at every deployment within the city of Hudson, we're there for a reason that we've made an assessment of the risk on the other side of the door, and that's why we deploy our team. The purpose is for safety. I don't want to tempt fate, but in the deployments in the city of Hudson, we've been safe. Safe for the officers, safe for bystanders, neighbors, and safe for the defendant. And I said at the beginning of the last meeting that I promised that I never made a promise that there would be no deployments within the city of Hudson, but if there were, that I would weigh all the factors before deploying and I take responsibility for the times that we have deployed. It's because there was some kind of threat assessment, again, on the other side of the door. And not a light threat assessment, generally a police officer, intelligence, undercover operations, person's past history of violence that leads us to use the shared services team to give a measure of safety. So this is a portion of what we've taken from our city.
Thank you. I want to open it up to the public. If you can just state your name and where you live in the city. And I just ask everyone to maintain a level of respect.
Okay, William Hughes. I live in 307 State Street in the city of Hudson. And I attended the Board of Supervisors meeting last week, and I also read the articles. And at that time, I said it was unfortunate, the article that ran in the paper, because I think it mischaracterized the whole situation from my standpoint of view, from where I came from. And I continue to stand by that for the simple reason is, it seems like a lot of issues are being conflated, right? We're taking police issues where we feel as people within the minority community are being targeted by police unfairly. And I would agree with some of that assessment. I haven't really seen it here in Hudson, but when we start talking about stop and frisk and those kinds of things, I am a strong opponent of that kind of police action. But when we're talking about the kind of action that took place as far as this raid in the city of Hudson, if we were to keep that issue focused on, are we against raids? Because I've been reading a lot of posts where people are saying they're like advocating against raids altogether. Are we against raids? Or are we against the way the raid was conducted? Because what I can say is that someone who works closely with the opiate issue in the city, and I'm still working at through my service on the community service board, the police, the chief put out some numbers, which I believe chief might be a little higher actually than the numbers he stated. But within Columbia County, we were averaging a death a month. And I don't know if people in the room actually understand that. We're not talking about overdoses. We were averaging one death a month. There was one instance last year when we had 11 deaths between the two counties. People have to put that in perspective. 11 deaths. This isn't overdoses. I actually had someone overdose between my house and Supervisor Musman's house, and I wasn't there to deploy my Narcan kit, but fortunately a police officer got there in time and was able to bring this person back. So with us understanding and having the knowledge of knowing that this is indeed the case, that this opiate situation has become to the level of where I think it's beyond now what we're trying to say, you know, it's taking over this county. You know, it is definitely at an epidemic state. We have to do something to remove these drugs. And For the people out there saying starting with the pharmaceuticals, I'm all on board with that. I helped lead the county to sue the pharmaceutical. But where the void is, the drug dealers are picking up. And we know, I mean, we have proven data. We know that the drug dealers are purposely making some of these packages of drugs hot so that they will purposely overdose some of the people that are using them. And I am saying that if we have drug dealers that are out in the street, and I don't care who it is, if we have drug dealers that are out in the street pushing this kind of thing, I don't want them in my neighborhood. I don't care what color skin they are. I don't care where they live. I want them out of my neighborhood. If we can move them downstate or wherever they want to go, we want to send a message that we do not want that in Hudson. And I think that's the kind of message that the police chief and the sheriff was trying to send. Now, if we in the audience have an argument about the way they conducted that, I think we can have a civil discussion around, you know, the kind of tactics they use. I'm not in law enforcement, so I'm not an expert on that. But with the data that came forth, I have. And I know it's pretty critical, and we should be very concerned about that data. Thank you.
Claudia Burris, 308 State Street. The war on drugs has been going on for a very long time. And there seem to be, in these raids, more and more guns and ammunition being seized. So it's not getting, there are no less guns. There are more and more and more. And that's a whole other issue. Why are there guns? These are unregistered guns. Are these the guns from your raid this on State Street? These are the ones that came from State Street? Am I understanding this correctly?
This would be a lot from one raid.
That's what I'm asking. No. So what came from the raid on State Street?
I broke it down. First of all, does anyone know how many deployments we've had in the city of Hudson since shared services started?
It hasn't been many, I don't think.
Does anyone have a guess?
Three.
We're averaging about three a year. So of the since the inception of the shared services, we've had nine deployments. In the nine deployments, five times weapons were recovered, and nine weapons total have been seized during deployments.
So nine
raids over 3 years, five weapons. Now, mind you, they're all back up with warrants, and it's always recently picked a venue for a location for a raid is because we've documented drug activity there or some kind of criminal activity. So we always have a defendant that stems from one of these actions. So the weapons that have been seized this year are not here because they're still active in the prosecution.
I still would like to say, and I do, Tiffany did say, we do depend, everybody here depends on the police. When someone stands up and says something about the police, there's a lot of people who say, oh, well, they don't support the police. That is not true. My concern is that the trust between the community and the police is harmed by the SWAT raids because they are overwhelming. In a neighborhood, people are harmed who really shouldn't be harmed in these raids. I mean, I think there were people in this raid There were young children involved.
May I ask respectfully, were you down there?
No, I was not.
Okay,
down
so
there.
I was.
I did see the video.
So what happened? Let me tell you how it works. I promised when we formed this. Gotta remember, back in August of 2014, I suspended SWAT. I'm not sitting here as an advocate for SWAT or love SWAT. I don't love it. I wish we didn't have to have SWAT in our town. I'm with you on that. Okay, we suspended the SWAT team in August of 14. The reason being is we had to bring the training up to a professional level for everybody's safety. So with the sheriff and with the additional help from the sheriffs. Two sheriffs, we've got to the point where we can train a lot and do this with a professional level. Every deployment, and what I said at that time was that we would only deploy shared services when I thought that there was a safety risk, that we wouldn't willy-nilly
you know, go down the street and parade large weapons and all this other stuff to intimidate our people. I understand that. The 9 actions that you've seen over 3 years is because we assessed what was going on at that location and figured there might be a possibility of violence. It's at that point that we deploy the team. Now, the team goes in there, yes, and it is scary. We understand that. I'm at every one of them. And, for example, the last one, I talked to a lot of citizens on that block to assure them that they're okay, that it was safe. And then we try to get the intimidation factor out of there. And in that case, the trucks and everything was going in 20 minutes, leaving the police behind to execute the remaining search warrants. So I understand how folks are going to be upset and when they see these kind of vehicles and such, but I wanted to get through these conversations. The reason that they're deployed is to for the protection of everybody, even though it's hard to understand if you don't know the whole everything that's going on at that location.
I would think that knocking on a door for any kind of event that you think might be dangerous is terrifying. So then you have, this is even more terrifying. So you have terrifying and more terrifying.
National investigations that you would support. A lot of these weapons come from that. But in the instances where we know we have intelligence and information that there's potential for violence, that's the opportunity to use the shared services team. And that, to me, is the responsible action, because in a lot of these cases, we could be stopping a car or arresting a person and finding a weapon on them. We don't have the convenience of plan. But when I'm able to plan, I want to use every precaution possible.
So when you plan with the team, which is you and the sheriff, and how does the city know that's going to happen? I mean, is the mayor involved?
Sometimes I speak to the mayor just prior to an incident to know that there's going to be an incident in town in case there's any public, you know, concern. Obviously, we have to be guarded for everybody's protection and announcing when we're going to do something. You just can't operate that way. If we have a search warrant, I can't go out and say, hey, everyone on this block, get ready because we're coming, because that'll defeat the purpose.
I would think that the mayor would be involved, like, with the say-so of, you know, like, here I am. I'm the mayor of the city. I'm the civilian mayor. And that he could say, I don't think this is a good idea, or I think this is a good idea, or is it totally up to you? In which case,
I think the mayor
is
it? Yes, hi, I'm Rick Rector. I'm the mayor of the city of Hudson. And I want everyone to know that I have complete faith in our police chief and our police department. And the fact that we have not put a commissioner over the police department for the past, is it a year now? Approximately a year, maybe a year and a half. I think, first of all, I congratulate on the direction the chief has taken the police department. It's a difficult scenario, and we're talking about a lot of issues here. So no, the chief advised me when he's doing something like this, an hour maybe in advance or 2 hours. He's the expert. I am not the expert. I am the mayor of the city of Hudson. I'm sworn in to protect everybody, and I have complete faith in him and his department. So we're talking about a lot of issues here that we discussed the other night at 401 State, a lot of social issues, and I think they're all great conversations, and we should be having this discussion about a lot. I think William said it very nicely. If I ever thought someone was targeting a certain group, I'd be jumping up and down. And that's not the case here. We're involved in an epidemic of huge proportions, where people are dying, where people are, it's ruining lives. I have a nephew that died several years ago. I have another nephew in the same family that's been in and out of jail and in and out of treatment year after year after year. This is a frightening, scary situation. So when we ask our police, and we ask our law enforcement to protect us, I have to trust in them. And they don't know what's on the other side of that door. And this, I think, is, I didn't know this was going to happen, but it's an interesting example. This is on the other side of the door. And I want to make sure that our people that are sworn to protect us have as much protection as they possibly can, too. I think the chief said it better than anyone last week at the county meeting when he said, you know, listen, I'm open to the tactics, but I'm not open to discussing the motive. We know the motive, and it's getting rid of drugs on the streets of Hudson.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I got one. Hi. I'm Dylan Leibman. I live on Lower Union. And I have a couple comments. Try to get through real quick. One, I just really want to thank the police for the good work they do. That I want to be clear on in this whole discussion. We don't have a bad force in this town. I've seen bad places. This is great. My main request, I'll start with a positive thing, which is that I think, like Rick said, we have an epidemic, and there's a lot of different ways outside of traditional policing to deal with that. And so first, I'd like to like try to offer my help and also ask for support and cooperation from anyone who's interested in this in looking at harm reduction models. There's been a lot done around that, in both in New York City and all over the country. There's great trainings on it that help deal with the addiction side, you know?
Yes.
You know? And so, if anything, that's what I would like to come out of this meeting with is, hey, let's do that. Anyone who's interested, I'd love the cooperation and support of the chief and the council on that. And any recommendations, I'm not experienced in that. I'm just looking into it myself. The other two things, less the joint services, but more just that truck. You're right. I don't know about the police tactics, but that truck driving down the street—that's the image we all saw. That in particular is concerning. One, if it's not necessary, that's concerning. Sure. If it is necessary, that's more concerning, and that's why I want to look at alternatives. It's crazy that we've gotten to this point, because Hudson has always had a lot of drug problems. And in fact, when you came here, there was open dealing on the streets. That got shut down. And there's been some of a clampdown since then, what I could say. And that leads me to kind of my third, I might come back to the truck, but this isn't an easy issue. But one of my concerns is that when you take out an established drug dealers in the city, people who know their business, have been going about it, right? I'm concerned that often when those guys are removed, the replacement is a teenager. You know, it's a younger, dumber, more volatile kid who sees the money, sees the opportunity, and gets into it. And I don't know if that's what led to the violence last summer. I don't know much about that. But my concern is that is a thing that happens. We run in, we say, let's get rid of all the drugs, let's get rid of all the drug dealers. People still are going to buy drugs. An addict isn't going to be like, oh, I'll go somewhere else. An addict wants to find drugs. And there's a market there. So you're going to end up with younger, more volatile people moving into those. Because if there's a higher turnover, more risk, more money, hey, that's a younger guy. And so I see that as a real problem that actually escalates things and ends up with the truck, you know? So I'm just, to me, the message sent by that, I know your message was like, hey, let's, you know, let's send them, get out of town, you know, send them a message. But to me, the message is like, this is crazy. Like that the police are either desperate or out of touch. That's what it looks like. I've heard you. Or, you know, I mean, like, why do we have an armored vehicle driving down the street? And I hear it, like, for safety. And I have to trust you guys on that. But so anyways, I want to move towards possibly newer, more sophisticated, maybe more enlightened ways of dealing with the drug problem. And I'd like to do that together so that the police can coordinate. It's complicated, but I don't know how many steps ahead you're thinking when you say, hey, let's run them out of town, because I don't necessarily see that happening.
Can I respond? I don't operate on a principle that I'm winning the war on. Are we
even waging the war on drugs. I operate on a very basic principle, that the availability of drugs in this town, okay, has to be less than the availability of help. Now, we in HPD are doing our part to try to eradicate the availability from very bad drug dealers, very people that are set out to harm other people and make money. I look at it as we're doing our part. We have open felonies. Drug dealing happens. So an addict comes into town, they can readily get drugs. Our part is to eradicate that, but there's another half. There's true. The addict has to find help. It's easily accessible as the folks standing on the street corner selling drugs. Okay? That's where we're open to conversation. Churches, social services, individuals, concerned individuals, we have to work together. But on the other hand, as a police department, when we are watching hours of surveillance of open drug dealing, I feel compelled to do something about that. And then you throw in the fact that there is a proliferation of guns. You know, I talked to a retired sergeant who worked in the 70s, retired in the 80s, 20-some years, didn't have any gun violence. Okay, they had, some of us know that, back in the 70s, there was fights and there was knifings and things like that, but there was no gun violence. This is really why I brought this. This is what's going on in 2.2 square miles. This is what causes the armored vehicle. Now, is it form over substance? Is that what you're saying? Is the image of it more compelling than the actual safety it provides? I don't know, but I don't have the luxury of that discussion because I'm responsible for 26 individuals. I'm sending them into that building. And like I said in 401, if I didn't take the precaution and they were harmed, I couldn't live with myself, or a citizen, or even a defendant, you know? So when these things happen, I'm sick until it's over, you know? I'm worried about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I go to every deployment. So I think, you know, I respect your opinion, and I think you're onto something. But it's almost one-dimensional with the police in that when I see a felony, I have to act on it. The alternative is not to. And then what would fill that void?
Yeah, I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't in a particular case, but a more sophisticated view is understanding that, you know, like for instance, when there was open drug dealing in this town, a lot of that was somewhat sanctioned, and there, you know, like I remember police watching the deals go down and not stopping it. There was some sort of arrangement going on, and I just think that, you know, sometimes a more sophisticated approach that's thought through, so that you say, yeah, there's this guy, but you know, he's not harming anybody. I mean, other than, you know, we could test the drug. I don't know the answer. I know it's a complicated thing. What I'd like to do is start to look at all the different ways that we can deal with drug addiction in this town and make sure that we don't spiral out of control with escalation. Because, like I said, you get rid of one bad dude, what's to stop a younger, dumber bad dude from taking his place and making it that way? I mean, I feel sad for the kids who end up in that situation.
Yeah,
you know?
I do move on,
okay.
My name is Tiffany Garriga, second ward alderman. I have a question for the chief. It was said earlier that shared services was used three times, and out of those three times, were there any attack against the officers? Did anybody shoot at the officers to where you guys needed to use shared services again? Because I know the concern of the people is shared services and bringing that back to the council to look at it again to be removed. So,
I'm just curious what you do in place of them.
I'm sorry?
I'm curious if you have a warrant and you know this is in the house, how would you go about arresting that person?
You would conduct your raid, but we're talking about the shared services. So I'm asking you, were the police attacked to where you all, when you had to do your next raid, it was, we have to absolutely use shared services?
No. I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm following the question.
Did anybody attack the police during the raid?
She's basically saying she wants a cop to get injured.
I didn't say that.
That's not what she's saying.
I did not say that. And
Tiffany,
please,
can you just follow through with your explanation, please? I don't want.
I was asking, not wanting, I'm asking, was the police ever attacked during a raid?
We've had nine deployments. No officer's been harmed.
Thank you.
Thanks for following up. Were any bystanders or defendants harmed?
No.
When you
no.
Hello, my name is Emma Roberts, and I want to say that I'm against drugs, and I'm not here to bash the police office, because you all do a great job. But there's one thing that kind of bothered me, the way it went down. Was it last week with the raid out by Dunkin' Donuts? I had two grandkids that was really, they're going to counseling right now, the 15-year-old was thrown to the floor, handcuffed with a gun pressed against his back. And the 10-year-old young girl, my granddaughter, had to have her hands up in the air. My daughter, who's a nurse, asked them, she was asleep, she only had on a t-shirt and her undies, and she had them up, and she begged them to please let her put a pair of pants on. They refused and took her outside, handcuffed with her son and her daughter. And those kids right now are traumatized from that. But like I said, I'm against drugs, and I'm not here to bash and law enforcement.
I don't know the details of that action. I don't anything of which you speak, so I don't feel I can respond. I can respond to every deployment that I'm at. So I respect what you're saying, but I don't have an answer for you. I can't tell you I was there or saw anything like that happen.
Chief, you spoke about suspending the SWAT for more training. What did that training incorporate?
I'm sorry, the last part of the call?
What kind of trainings did the officers?
Okay, so what happened was there's been a SWAT team. I think the past sheriff Bertram said there's been SWAT deployed in the city and the county for many, many, many years. What's happened is when I came here as chief, we did an assessment of our capabilities. You know, how prepared are we? How well trained are we? And state also put in some requirements to keep our certification or as a police department, you know. So accreditation. So we suspended it and said, hey, you know, we didn't feel we were up to speed with the professional level we're at. Plus, we wanted to share the expenses. You know, a good majority of the police department used to be in the SWAT team. So we decided to step back, joined in with Sheriff Bartlett, and decided we could do better, bring us up to a higher level of training. And I think you see it because it's, you know, it's not just warrant execution, it's all manner of training brings these guys up to a proper level. And that's where I think we are now.
And before you do a raid, there's hours upon hours of surveillance and studies on each individual that's arrested. So are you knowledgeable that these individuals have families or they could be small children at home?
Yeah, I know at the 500 block raid on June 2nd that there was a child there, so they altered their tactics to protect the child. So use of flashbangs and stuns, something that wasn't used. So that presents a risk to the officer, believe it or not. But they accepted that risk for the ultimate protection of the child. And the defendant was charged with unlawfully dealing with a child, or no,
endangered
welfare of a child because of the drug dealing and weapons and stuff that were presented in front of that child. So they changed their tactics depending on. Every situation is different, you know?
I appreciate Ms. Roberts speaking to this. I don't want to go too into it, but Chief, you and I know each other, and that my concern is always about the welfare of young people and young people in the city, and it's a safety concern. And I do respect you and your work, and in the spirit of betterment for all young people in the city, I do feel that there should be some acknowledgement that young people were involved in the raid last week. In fact, there was a photograph on the cat of a minor in the middle of the SWAT raid. Mm-hmm. So it's undeniable. And, you know, not only did he see that and know that his face was then there, all of his peers, all of his teachers and other people know that that child was involved in that and who his parents are. That sends a message to all these young people in our community. And then, you know, I believe, Ms. Roberts, that that was the experience that they had. That family is a family that lives in Hudson. It seems hard to believe that there wasn't another time that could have been chosen when children weren't in the home, that could not have harmed them, that could have been respectful, and actually more safe. And so I just do want that to be acknowledged, and also to have a commitment from you that there will be an effort going forward to not only pursue harm reduction from the addiction perspective, because it's true that where there's demand, there's going to be supply, but harm reduction from the enforcement, and that especially, most especially, that we're minimizing any potential harm to children and families, and ideally, minimizing harm to everyone, but that that be a top priority of going into any raid. And even if you weren't at that one, it is your department and you are ultimately responsible. And so, you know, those are choices that I think that you have some jurisdiction over. So that's just something I want to put out there.
I'm Sheriff Bartlett, and I can speak on that raid.
Oh, thank you.
We did recover narcotics from there. Mm-hmm. Anybody that knows anything about narcotic trafficking, a lot of times they'll keep drugs in rice to keep it from getting wet. Unless somebody had a bad night of Chinese food, there was a ton of rice inside the bathroom, inside the toilet, and also around the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So basically, to make a long story short, heroin was recovered, but there was a lot of drugs flushed during that raid. Mm-hmm. We always take into consideration the kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Joni Hunt. We're getting,
yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
They're shooting here.
Yeah, she's okay. Yeah,
with her baby. Baby back there. We're getting ready to work with her, the city PD, and we're trying to get the state police on as far as with the kids.
Yeah.
Because the kids, they are the innocent victims here. And any time that we have a child in there, we take precautions to work with that. I know the one young lad in this particular raid was extremely upset to the point where one of my guys actually went over and had to calm him down. So as far as what happened inside, I don't know what happened inside. I was outside. Actually, I had moved from 508 up to that one. Somebody had asked earlier, has anybody ever been hurt? Thank God in the city of Hudson, no. I can say in the sheriff's office, yes, they have. I've had one of my guys shot during an op out in Philmont, and it wasn't a drug raid, it was a barricaded individual. Drug raid, one of my guys got, the bad guy got away from the SWAT team because they were kind of deciding whether to use cuffs or flex cuffs, and that split second of waiting and not dynamically just taking the individual into custody, a person ran. When he ran, one of my investigators got 7 stitches right across the top of his head because a light pole got slammed into his head. So we absolutely are working as far as what's inside the houses or the area where we're going. Mm-hmm. And that's what the whole operational plan comes into play. These ops plans, it's not just, yeah, okay, let's go. It's hours, if not days. We did think about doing the raid at a different time. Mm-hmm. It didn't work out because of some other underlying situations, but we talked about maybe a daytime hit, and it didn't work out for that. So we are very, very thoughtful as far as what's going on inside that house. I can speak from experience. I was on a SWAT team for 10 years, and every time we go in, if there's a kid, we try to get that child out as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. reunite them with a family member, and start talking to them. Mm-hmm. On a non-official way, I know personally myself, I'll call the school in the morning. Mm-hmm. Hey, little Johnny may be a little bit different today because this is what happened last night. Mm-hmm. Just to give him the heads up. This is why with Joni, we're going to try and do this initiative where it's a little bit more official now.
Yeah.
Where if there's an interaction with a child, we notify the school, no matter what it is. This is on like the grand scheme of things, the right. drug rates. Maybe it's just a simple domestic.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's something like that where mom and dad got into it. I just left one 2 hours ago where mom and dad were getting into it. There were two little kids there. You know, and so we are thoughtful of the kids. We're thoughtful of the parents. You know, it's just.
I appreciate that, and I do appreciate some of the work that you've been doing. I follow it, and I recognize it. And I just, as a quick follow-up, was curious if training your officers in the sheriff's department around how they communicate with, if so, ideally there are no children in any environment that you go into, but also how they communicate or interact with those children, because from what I've read and heard, fairly trustworthy sources, that those children were sworn, their swears were used towards them.
Yeah.
And that should never, there's never any reason,
right.
there's no safety reason
yeah.
why any child should ever be sworn at by an officer, or anyone for that matter, or threatened in that particular way. So I just want to know, is going forward for both the police department and the sheriff's department, if there's going to be training around respectfully interacting with youth in those
and they do.
Yeah.
And I can say that particular team wasn't from this county.
Oh, I see.
That was at that house.
Okay.
We had to call in. I ended up calling in other teams.
Right. Well, so that's one of the results. So
because we didn't have enough bodies. And when we did the shared services team, the chief hit the nail right on the head. I was spending huge amounts of overtime because I had 10, 15 people on a team. We put all these officers together. It's a more professional team, well-trained. It's over. The state oversees all this as far as state accreditation. We're both accredited agencies. And we take pride on what we're doing. This is a dangerous job that we do. You know, I've been in the middle of it before where bullets have been flying, and it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I love my job. Mm-hmm. I truly do. I think this is the best job in the world because I get to help people every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. And that's what I like about my job, and that's what I try to tell my young deputies when they come out, that we're here to help the public. We also have to do other things that some people don't like, but it's still our job to go do it. So, but thank you.
If I could just say one thing. Police do have some control over what we expose a child to during these situations. It's awful. But let's not forget the overarching issue, which is these children are being brought up in drug dealers' home. And someone needs to do something to consider that situation. Because we could tell you stories about what we see in these homes that we raid. Yeah, it's awful. We're there for a few minutes. It's a bad situation, screaming and crying. But let's not forget the day-to-day misery that these children are put through. And someone needs to come up with a plan for that.
Well, Chief, many of us are. We're
members
of the community who are very much in the lives of all these kids and trying to do that. And when they're harmed and traumatized, our work becomes even harder. Because then we're working with traumatized youth who are re-traumatized. So I just want to say yes, but this is the work that so many of us in this building and in this town are doing.
There's got to be some, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I want to go with the gentleman.
Mark Lane, Fifth Ward, Hudson. Hudson resident all my life. I just want to be a voice for the many, many people I've spoken with that appreciate the job the police, the sheriffs, and the state police are doing to try to eradicate the drugs in the city, and want them to continue doing that job. And a lot of people don't understand what goes on behind the scenes and what they have to go through before they actually make this commitment. And I want them to know that there's a lot of people that are behind them.
I want to say quickly, I don't think the tone is that it's two sides. I think that, you know, people in the community care about the safety of officers. Nobody is standing in here advocating for drug dealing. I think that people are unhappy because, you know, there's youth that are not even 16, can't even drive yet, and have guns pointed at them by officers. So in turn, you know, even though their parent may be committing a crime, now they look at that officer as a bad guy as well, because they're saying...
I would suggest that's a very isolated, small number
mm-hmm.
compared to, right? I mean,
yeah,
do you agree?
I don't doubt that, but it's still a number. And, you know, it makes me uncomfortable when people are like standing up, like, you know, we're standing for police, because I mean we all care about the safety of police, and like I don't think that's the issue.
Thank you.
John Kane, I'm in the third ward. I would like to say that as a child under 16, I lived in a house that was raided by federal law enforcement. I had many automatic assault rifles pointed at me, and that is a traumatic experience that stays with you. Having said that, I absolutely fully support the Hudson Police Department. In the years that I've lived in Hudson, I have found them to be professional, compassionate, caring, and I have seen them take great effort to outreach to the community and to integrate themselves to the community. And I think that is really important. There are some people here who I know think that, you know, this is an issue of, you know, how are we gonna approach the drug problem? And I think the police chief is absolutely right. I mean, his hands are kind of tied when he sees a felony happening. He is duty-bound to respond to that. You know, yes, we have a drug problem in Hudson, and yes, I think that there should be steps taken and avenues allocated for people who have drug problems, whether they're an addict or a low-level dealer, to get themselves out of that situation. And we as a community have a responsibility to create those paths. The police department has very limited capacity to tackle the entire drug problem themselves, and we have to respect that they have a role to play and that they're going to play that.
William Hughes again. So I wanted to talk about a couple of points, but the first one, Chief, and also Sheriff, I wanted to address is Ms. Roberts, which she says, after a raid, do you guys do a review process of the raid?
Yes.
And then speak to your officers and document that?
Yes. After action report.
And so is there some way, is there a mechanism for a citizen like Ms. Roberts to come in and file a formal complaint or to have a discussion with the officers on the incidents that took place?
I would say, for my department, and I don't speak for the sheriff, but you're welcome to come in at any time. Mm-hmm. And people do, you know, and then a lot of times, just like the discussion we're having today, when people learn about why we do something or why something happens, generally the problem goes away.
Right. Because I'm thinking if she were to mention that, it may not have been able to do anything for this particular incident, but moving forward, it probably will have allow you guys to change your tactics from the concerns being.
I mean, no disrespect to Emma, I just didn't know about what she was talking about to respond in any manner about what happened to her family. But surely, the things that I've witnessed and I'm accountable for within the city of Hudson, I'll always have the door open to anyone that wants to come in, frequently do.
So, and then my other point is the talk around harm reduction. Kamal knows this very well, and I know it as well. There is a lot of behind-the-scenes work going on in the county around harm reduction, and the plan that the county put forth really actually has very little focus on law enforcement, and probably two-thirds focus, if not more than three-quarters focus, on harm reduction. One of the things and the difficulties we have been having with trying to bring resources to the county is the state looks at Hudson and also Columbia County at the size of the population. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. And when the money is being doled out, they look and they say, wow, there's 6,000 people there. We got, you know, 100,000 people in Poughkeepsie that need the same services. So the money tends to flow that way. So the two counties, Greene County and Columbia County, did is decided that they were going to join forces simply for the numbers. And they're in the process of doing that now. And Kamal is doing some great work through the agency that he was working with to try to bring those services here so we can work more on harm reduction. Because I absolutely agree. One of the things the county did, when you had someone that OD'd, and I don't know if everybody in the room know that, but you had someone that OD'd and died in the bathroom of Nolita's, you know, and that traumatized the whole restaurant. But one of the things the county did immediately is provided a Narcan training that was put on by Helsinki. They sponsored it. The county came in and put on a Narcan training for all the restaurateurs in the city of Hudson that wanted it. And then they spread that out, and they did it for the Board of Supervisors and then other citizens in the community. For the simple fact is, to, again, try to lead towards that harm reduction. So there are a lot of things going on. There's more that need to be done, for sure. But until the county, the two counties can merge, you probably won't receive those state resources simply because you just don't have the numbers, unfortunately. It's a number game.
Thank you, Sam. You know, I forgot to tell you, during harm, and the sheriff would back me up on this, when we talk about harm reduction, there's a threat matrix or assessment, really, every time we do an operation. And you take the crime that's going on, the potential for violence, and also the threat to children is one of the categories. So, for example, our murder last week, there might be an exigent circumstance there that's overriding a child being in the area. For example, the murderer on the run with a gun, potential to shoot. So we do factor this in when we sit down and we do an assessment of whether to do a search warrant in particular. The child is definitely a component of that kid. It is definitely a component. Now, is it 100% foolproof? Do we screw up at times? Absolutely. And I expect to be called on. But it is a consideration. It's a very important consideration done every time.
Other questions, comments? Go ahead, sir.
Reverend Grant from Shiloh, listening to dialogue, certainly it's always good to hear both sides and concerns and to learn why certain things are being done. You mentioned much about training for SWAT or training for this, and we know also in the county level, they do this constant training of our law enforcement officers to be better equipped to address the rising changes in the offenders. But I think we ought to also at some point start looking at training the citizens how to try to respond. In other words, so that you, I'll use an example of my congregation. I take time to tell the young people and their seniors, the adults rather, how to respond when they're pulled over by an officer. And that's training, because a lot of folks don't know. Now, I make sure my young men and young women know that, first of all, you comply, and then you roll down your windows, you turn down your music, and there's at night, you put your dome lights on, you put your hands on the steering wheel. And that's training, because that sets a good tone. I might talk about why they were pulled over, what happens afterwards. But setting up that scenario, and I think it's time for us as a community to also look at enforcing these things by helping the citizens to know things that they need to know also. I got pulled over on Friday. at Friday night. I still do that. I pulled over, rolled my window down, cut my dome lights on, put my hands on the steering wheel, and I said, good evening, officer. As it was, we chat. But the point is, we need to know that. And I think that all the things that's happening right now is good also if we can take time to set up something where the leaders, all the people, all the men and women, and also the supervisors can buy into this thing within a respective constituency to help educate. Our young people coming up now, some of them have the opinion, yes, cops are bad people, based on their experience, all right? And some of us are even trying to perpetuate that. On the same token, citizens need to be trained. Drug dealers, during my watch, Hudson was a good target. They would come up by train, get off the train. They need to set up shop. It was much easier for them to set up shop by finding a young lady to move in with. And now they got shot. We need to train. Thank you.
I do want to make one comment to that. And that training has to go hand in hand with the community and the officers, because, I mean, we've seen so many times people with their hands up and they still were shot. And that's not indicative of your force. I don't want to put that on you guys, but that's something that we've seen nationwide where they had their hands up and they were still murdered. So I don't want us to leave this room thinking that you just look over with a smile and you're automatically safe.
You haven't been in the committee, this is your first time, but
yes.
Every year in this committee I report the proportions of vehicle and traffic tickets. We look to vehicle and traffic tickets to see if a particular minority group or a section of the community is being ticketed or pulled over.
The Coyote Ghost radio show is about to begin. It's going to take over the broadcast. If you want to keep listening to this, you have to go online to WGXC.org and click on Listen Now. Hudson Common Council meeting is coming up next if you click on Listen Now.
We don't see that disproportional matter of pulling people over here in this police force.